think there's a lot of fear around actually turning towards difficulty, you know, whether that's fear, whether that's sadness, whether that's anger, because it's almost like, you know, I don't want to look at this because I'm scared of what's going to happen. You know, am I going to lose my head if I really jump into the way that I feel? Is it going to destroy me?
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. Our aim is to help you own your experience. I'm Hayley Manning.
And I'm Catherine Mousley. Lucy Livesey is joining us today to talk about mindfulness, meditation and well-being during and after loss. Lucy is a mental health nurse and a well-being practitioner and set up Relax with Lucy & Co. in 2017 after experiencing the death of her daughter Ellie in a TFMR. Relax with Lucy is a not-for-profit organisation seeking to help people feel happier and healthier. Lucy created the Ellie's Gift app to the memory of her daughter and is a tool to help parents who are birthing a baby who's died or will die, and it helps them to remain calm and relaxed through the birthing process.
Yeah, so Catherine, we've spoken a little bit in previous episodes about our experience of birthing our babies, you, Bud, me, Luna. And I don't know if we've spent too much time talking about anxiety around that, maybe a little bit, but yeah, how were you? This is a silly question. How were you?
I don't remember anxiety. I remember just panic and fear, maybe. Maybe the fear was mixed in with anxiety. Like just an overriding fear of the unknown, I guess, what was going to happen, what to expect. Like no one told me anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, you were in a gynae ward.
Yeah.
And you were on your own quite a bit, weren't you?
For most of it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so my experience is a little bit different. I was on the labor ward, but in a bereavement suite. I had a bit more information about what might happen. But I have to say, I mean, all of that was, they kind of don't tell you till they sort of need to. And this has come up in other episodes as well about, you know, having the information and being able to make decisions. And it's really tricky because I can kind of see why they don't just like dump all of it on you at once, because it would just be too overwhelming. The whole situation is overwhelming.
Do you think there was a difference because you knew, you obviously had Benjamin?
I think that I was thinking about this afternoon and going, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fear. What I was worried about, I didn't know what it was going to be like to birth. Well, I was told that there may be signs of life. So again, it was kind of don't know exactly what's going to happen. But I didn't know if I was going to just completely panic. I didn't know if I'd start screaming. Like it was a real unknown entity. But I think when labor started, it was so similar to my labor with Benjamin that I had something to kind of go, okay,
yeah,
I know what's happening here. So I think that probably did help lowering my fear, because in the end I was actually quite calm and excited to meet Luna.
I remember anxiety around how long it was going to take,
yeah,
and what I was going to feel pain-wise as well.
Yeah.
And I remember that as a punishment. I felt like I had to be punished and I had to like deserve this pain without any pain relief just because of the decision we made, really, which is quite sad.
Yeah.
It makes me quite sad to think about that.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the kind of thing I think a lot of people might feel, especially if they don't have a bereavement midwife with them or they're on a labor ward. I think that could add to that feeling of, well, I just need to take this, we're just going to say right now,
anyone,
you don't have to take any of that.
Is anyone going, right, well, this is the next stage, this is what's going to happen.
Like,
even that would have been helpful, but
So that feels like a good place to bring Lucy in. Hi, Lucy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hiya. Thank you for having me on.
It's really good to have you here. So tell us about what you do, you know, this mindfulness and mindfulness meditation. What is it? What can you sort of tell us about that?
I'm very intrigued because everyone keeps telling me I need to meditation and I'm like, nah, it's fine. So now you can tell us what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just trying to think of a good kind of starting point, really. I came across meditation around about 8 years ago. I was experiencing a lot of anxiety and I really wanted to look at something that would help to lessen my experience of what was going on. I unfortunately lost my twin brother when we were 15. He collapsed and died. And that led to me having to cope with difficulties with anxiety following his death, and I struggled for many, many years and had counseling, and you know, there was times where I was okay and then times where it would bubble up and surface and I didn't know how to cope with these emotions and what to do with them. So I kind of distracted myself with, you know, I was a teenager, so it was alcohol, it was boys, it was just anything to kind of not think about what happened. And it all kind of came to a head at university when I was training to be a psychiatric nurse. There was a lot of different stresses going on, not just grief. And I had an extreme panic attack, and those panic attacks continued. So I went to my GP. He told me to take medication, but didn't tell me to do anything else. And I was curious to look at what else I could do. And two things that were coming up a lot during the research that I was doing and while I was training to be a psychiatric nurse were relaxation and meditation practices. So I read and I really explored the topic, and I started to listen to guided recordings of meditation. And I practiced, and what started to happen was the anxiety lessened and the panic attacks resolved, which then kind of, once I became a nurse, I decided to go and do further training to teach meditation to the patients that I was working with, because I felt like it was a tool that everybody should know about, and you know, it was an optional thing.
And would you like to tell us a little bit about what meditation actually is? Because even I don't really know. So
yes, okay. So meditation is, I would say, a technique, a tool. It basically means paying attention to something, concentrating on something. Now, that something can be your breath, it can be something you can hear, it can be sensations in the body, it could be a mantra, which means a word or a, you know, a sentence. It's basically just bringing your awareness to what's happening in the present moment, because so many of us are so often living in the past in our minds, or we're so often jumping into the future, and actually none of those things have happened yet. And the problem is, when we spend time in the past or the future, we don't really deal with what's here in the present, and we don't engage with life as it unfolds, because we're kind of either jumping way into the future or we are just clinging on to the past. So meditation teaches us to be present with what's here now. And I mean, unfortunately, that means being with what's difficult as well as what's also pleasant. So it teaches us to embrace all of it in one bigger container.
Would you say that it kind of helps you to learn to tolerate those difficult feelings, emotions, sensations?
It's more about befriending what's there.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like, you know, if there's a small child that needs you and they're upset. So for example, when we're experiencing anger, a lot of us, there's a resistance with anger. We might push it down, or, you know, we may jump into it. We may lash out.
Or feel ashamed, maybe.
Yeah.
Some people feel ashamed about being angry.
Exactly. So there's other things that can come in. But meditation teaches us to be with what's there and to care for it and to hold space and to allow it to be seen. And then we have our breath, which is our anchor. So we can use the act of mindful breathing, deep breathing, to be with what's there and breathe with it, which is extremely difficult. But you know, the alternative is resistance. And when we resist it, it persists, it gets louder and bigger. It doesn't go anywhere. It just kind of, you know, you might think, oh, I'll put the lid on it, but actually at some point it bubbles over. So meditation is about developing an awareness. And we do that through the practices of formal practices, which allow us to concentrate on something. So it's like, if I was to say to you, we're going to practice now focusing on the breath, and your mind will keep wandering around, because that's what it does.
I was about to say that, like, I'm chaotic. I was about to say, like, how do you bring yourself back constantly
to do that? If you go to a gym class and you've never done the class before, say like a Zumba class or something, you know, have you ever been to a Zumba class where you dance around, or you, I don't know, maybe weight?
I haven't done Zumba, but I used to do step classes back in the day, because I am that age. 90s
with
baby.
The lycra, and leg warmers and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So the first time you went, you was probably really crap at it,
But then, you know, you keep going, you learn, start to learn the steps, and, you know, you start to remember the sequences. Well, it's like that in meditation. It's called a practice because we have to practice. So a lot of people come into meditation and they say, I can't empty my mind. Well, we're not trying to empty our mind in meditation. And I want, if anyone's listening, just kind of.
They're listening. Of course they're listening. They're going to be listening. There's loads of people listening, Lucy.
All of you listening.
Thank you.
If you think that meditation is about emptying your mind of thought, we don't do that. What we're learning to do is we're learning to be with the breath or be with the body or be with sound. In the meantime, thoughts will come in, but we're learning to create some space so that we can sit back and we can notice that those thoughts are there, whether they're unhelpful thoughts, pleasant thoughts, guilt, you know, strong emotional thoughts coming in really, really thick and fast. It's about understanding that we are not our thoughts and our thoughts do not define us. And that thoughts are not facts. Yeah, we're separate from our thoughts. So meditation, it allows us to develop that strength, that muscle in the mind to pay attention more, so that when we go out into the real world and difficulties arise, we're actually in a place of mindfulness, which is being aware to acknowledge that this is a difficult thought that I'm having, but I don't necessarily have to jump into that. I can be here with this. I can breathe with it. And I can maybe acknowledge, what do I need right now? And what you need right now might be, you might need a hug. You might need some space away on your own. You might need a hot shower. You just might need to journal. You might not need anything. So meditation, you know, it is a practice. And a lot of people, there's a belief around you have to be a certain, you know, religion or a certain type of person to practice. You can do meditation anywhere, anytime. All you have to do is pay attention to something in the present moment. And if you do that enough, then you're starting to develop this area in the brain, starts to strengthen so that you're much more able to notice more. But what you're doing is you're noticing with a non-judgmental attitude, and you're also being kind and compassionate to whatever's there. You know, you're not kind of saying, I don't want this. This is horrible. It's more about acknowledging, this is sadness. It's uncomfortable. I'm hurting and I'm here for myself and I'm going to breathe with this.
So I noticed you said like develop and practice. Mm-hmm. So like, would you say that's like a daily thing you have to do to get to a level where you're, what you're talking about, obviously to just acknowledge these thoughts and let them go?
Yeah. So I will say a little goes a long way. It's amazing just how effective it can be, even with 5 minutes every day. People say to me, I've got no time to meditate. We say, if you haven't got time to meditate, you need to meditate, because obviously there's a lot of space that's being taken up in your mind because of all these extra thoughts that you're having. So meditation actually gives us more time because we're much more able to create that space and that distance from what we're experiencing.
Well, if you've got 5 minutes to scroll on Instagram, then you've got 5 minutes to meditate.
I mean, as you were talking, Lucy, I had this real sense of space, you know, and you keep saying that word, and it does really sound that that's what meditation, specifically mindfulness meditation, gives us or allows us to have. It just gives us a bit of like space between what we might be feeling or experiencing. And because when you are feeling, let's say you're feeling really anxious, and maybe fear mixed in with that, it's almost kind of hard to step out of it in the moment. So it sounds like what mindfulness meditation can help just give you like a sort of step back from it or step up from it.
And if you are like feeling that intense, like Hayley's has said, like what would you suggest to focus on? Because like some people just don't know what they're going to hear, that like leaves rustling, is it the rain, is it a car, is it a train, or is it just what they're doing? Like, what would you suggest to focus on?
I think there's a lot of fear around actually turning towards difficulty, you know, whether that's fear, whether that's sadness, whether that's anger, because it's almost like, you know, I don't want to look at this because I'm scared of what's going to happen. You know, am I going to lose my head? If I really jump into the way that I feel, is it going to destroy me? It's easier to kind of, you know, turn away from it and to block it. A lot of us block a lot of what we're experiencing. When I say block, I mean we distract ourselves with TV, with radio, with food, with alcohol, with interactions. We keep ourselves busy because actually not being busy and just sitting with and being with what's there, it just feels like, wow, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We do.
I think we all are, aren't we? I mean, at some point we all are.
Yeah. Even therapy this week, you're like, you need to learn to relax. You have to sit down in the evening. You need to meditate. Yeah. You need to use Headspace. You need to do this. And I'm like, no, I need to be busy.
Yes. We need to be busy because it feels like it's, we can control how the day pans out when we're busy. When we sit with what's there, we can't control that.
It's the unknown, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like if I open this can of worms, what's going to happen? Will I be able to shut the can of worms?
Yeah.
Will I disintegrate? Will I just fall apart? Will I go mad? And that's the other thing is that I will speak from my own experience that I think I didn't know that that's what I was afraid of until I sat and did some meditation.
Yeah.
And then I realized that's what I was afraid of. I was afraid that I was going to lose my mind.
I was going to say, because like sometimes it feels illogical. Like, what is the worst case scenario? You're just going to sit and cry all evening? And if that does happen, like, you know, you're still going to be here.
Yes.
Like, how is that so fearful?
But I think it's this unconscious feeling of that if I do that, I am going to fall apart, you know, and that I won't be okay. Mm. And the reality is, yeah, you might cry for the rest of the evening or
maybe it is about control. Like you just so people have the risk of losing control, aren't they?
Yeah. So we teach people to be with suffering, to really, really embrace it like you would a friend, you know, care for it with tender, loving care, not to push it down, not to turn your head away from it, but to look at it and to be there and say, I see you and I understand that it's hard. This is hard for me right now, you know, but I'm here. And I know it sounds crazy speaking to, like, you know, the way that you feel if it's fear, you know, saying hello in your mind. If you want to say out loud, you could do, but really acknowledging, hello, fear. I see that you're here. You know, I know that you're here and it feels difficult for me, but I'm going to breathe with it and we're going to be here with this. And in order to move forward, in order to heal, you have to do this. You know, you can't keep pushing it down. You've got to just face whatever it is there. But to do that with kindness and compassion, it's really transformative. And this is what meditation allows us to do, to create that space. I have been on a retreat today, a day retreat online. And the retreat is all around grieving. And this morning, they asked us to imagine our loved ones with us and to do a walking meditation with them, but pretend that we were holding the hand. So in one hand, I had Ellie, my daughter, and in the other hand, I had my twin brother. And I walked with them. And I was bawling my eyes out. But what mindfulness teaches us is that, you know, we have our loved ones within us, you know, they're not, even though they're not here in the physical sense, they are within us because they are from us, you know, they're part of us. So, you know, that was an act of mindfulness for me this morning to be with that difficulty and that sadness. And I had to let those tears flow and breathe with it. And that it's allowing whatever is there, this blockage, because if we don't deal with grief, it becomes blocked in the body.
It's a process, isn't it, as well? Like, I think a lot of people facing grief and the fear is like, when is this going to end?
Yeah.
But it is an ever-evolving process.
The truth is it doesn't end.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't end. It keeps on evolving with us.
But I think that's the fear that people are struggling to face. So they make themselves so busy. They can't sit with it because it's so scary about, you know, this going on for months and months and months at an intense level.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's important, as Lucy's saying, that if we don't, then it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere.
You're caught up in that circle of not dealing with it and not dealing with it. It doesn't go anywhere and it gets bigger and bigger until, you know, something happens and you meet it head on in a torrent of just everything, emotion.
Yeah. And the body as well, the body will tell you. So when we don't process grief, it manifests in the body. So that means that, you know, it's quite common for people to have headaches, to wake up feeling groggy, to not be sleeping, to feel absolutely exhausted, and they don't know why.
I mean, after Luna died, I suffered with really bad panic attacks. I had PTSD, undiagnosed PTSD. I was going through the process of getting properly diagnosed. It took months. By the time they got around to it, it had resolved, but that's because I did a lot of my own work in the meantime. And mindfulness meditation was a part of that. And having to sit with the really difficult emotion and what was coming up, my body, my body, I was in so much physical pain. That's what started the whole thing off, actually, is I woke up one morning and couldn't get out of bed. My hips and my legs, which is where we will hold a lot of grief, is in our hips and our thighs, but they had just basically seized up. I just couldn't get out of bed and I was in so much pain. And Charlie was like, that's it. I'm taking you to the doctors. This is not right. And that's what sort of set it all off. I've experienced grief before. Both my parents have died, but it never manifested itself like this before. This was something beyond what I had ever experienced before.
Yeah.
And I had to find other tools.
Yeah. The thing is, that kind of thing gets written off, doesn't it? And then they only treat the physical pain, whereas then people can't see the mental pain.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just gets dismissed or discarded or something like that. And then that doesn't get dealt with. Yeah.
I had a question come in from our producer, Fiona. You won't hear Fiona's voice, but you will hear a question from her. she's very elusive, Fiona. She was just saying, did you know it was from your emotions? So she's asking me if I knew it was from my emotions. Yes, I kind of did know that it was from my emotions. I knew that this was related to the grief. I was also having a lot of jaw pain. So I knew that I had been grinding my teeth in the night, and I went and spoke to the dentist. Well, I think I had a dentist appointment and he said, your teeth are wearing. And I said, yeah, I've been waking up really a lot of tension and pain in my jaw. And I just burst into tears, and he didn't know what had happened. I burst into tears and told him what had happened. And he was really kind and just sort of brought me into his office, got me out of the chair and put me in the office and sort of sat with me and just sort of listened. I mean, that was my dentist. He's a lovely man. but yeah, no, I did know.
Yeah. It's really, you know, a lot of people don't know that. And I think in society, there's this expectation that you've just got to get on with life when you've lost something, you know, but, you know, it's difficult because especially when you've lost a baby, you know, it's hard to just get on with with normality.
Nothing is the same again.
Nothing at all. But, you know, and then people have to then go to work and then slot back into this life that they don't really know how to make sense of anymore. But,
and Lucy, do you think because you've had the experience of losing your brother, which we're very sorry to hear about, by the way, and in traumatic circumstances as well. I mean, you've got the experience of him being here as a 15-year-old boy. Lots of people knew him. He existed in a lot of people's lives. So that it's almost like we can recognize him as a grief and a loss to you and your family and his friends.
Yeah.
Whereas your daughter, Ellie, this is quite a very different thing, in which you're nodding. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? I think with loss. So like with Ashley, we knew his personality, we knew his friends, we knew how he looked. You know, we knew everything, probably not everything about him, but most things about him. and then with Ellie, you know, even though we knew how she looked, I mean, she was delivered at just under 24 weeks. So she looked probably how she would nearly look, but obviously, you know, at that point, there's still things that would have had to take place for in terms of a development. But, you know, you didn't really know her personality. I've got a 10-month-old now, and he's such a cheeky little chappy, and his personality is coming through, and it's just so funny. And I didn't know that of Ellie. So grief takes a whole new form because you grieve the fact that your daughter's not here, but you also grieve for those relationships that you think you might have had.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, memories and like what you imagined was going to happen.
Yeah. But then going back to the mindfulness stuff, what that teaches me is that, yes, you know, sometimes it can be quite nice to indulge in that what if, you know, what would she have been like? Would we have been close, etc.? But also that brings me a lot of suffering as well, because then I might enjoy that thought for a little bit, you know, wondering about this. But then the reality hits that actually that's never going to be a reality. So then I might then go down a different path.
Becomes torturous.
Exactly. So
mindfulness through the practice of, remember, we're developing this awareness to notice more of what's going on up here in the mind, that would then allow me to notice quicker. Oh, yes. Hello.
Yeah.
You're not being helpful. So I'm not going to go there, and I'm going to be with my breath here instead. I mean, a lot of people, when they're grieving, they put blockers up. So it means that, you know, they'll just completely disengage with life. Really, they just go through life on autopilot. Not really kind of facing up to how they feel emotionally following grief. Remember this idea of burying and resisting it. But the problem is, when we live like that with kind of a brick wall up, it also blocks out all of the good things that happen.
You can't be selective with this way, can you? You can't. You can't do that. It doesn't work like that.
No. And, you know, suffering doesn't have to stop in order for you to experience joy or happiness.
Yeah.
You can still feel sadness and everything else, but at the same time, you can still feel joy. It's just that mindfulness helps us to hold it all at the same time.
And you shouldn't be afraid to experience joy when you think you should be grieving or be unhappy.
Exactly.
But back to the people with the brick walls, like if they already have unhealthy coping mechanisms, perhaps they're going to go straight to those to relieve that suffering because they don't know any different. So, you know, I think that would benefit people to practice some mindfulness so they can even put a blocker in between going to those unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Completely, yeah. I've not had any alcohol for about 6 weeks. It's been a choice that I've made. I actually felt like I just wanted to feel healthier. Now, I wasn't using alcohol excessively, but I was using it at the weekends. You know, Friday would come and it was like Friday, bottle of red with my husband.
Woohoo, pop.
Yeah. it might be why you're using it. Like, it's not heavy drinking. It's, you go to it because I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling bored.
Exactly.
And agitated or something.
Yeah, and that was exactly, I've really took a good look at why I use alcohol, and why I was using alcohol was to press pause and to disengage with my life, because it maybe felt stressful, or, you know, maybe there's something, the situation happening in my life that I didn't really want to look at. And since making that decision to stop using alcohol, again, my mindfulness practice has deepened even more, because the reasons why I was using alcohol were for all the wrong reasons. You know, some people use alcohol because that's just what they like to do. There isn't anything wrong with using alcohol. It's just that for me, it was just a way of, it was a blocker. It was just a blocker.
Oh, I'm so guilty of that. Yesterday when I fell in, I went to meet a friend after some phone issues, and I'm like, so stressed, I need a glass of wine.
I know. Yeah, we do. But you know, we don't just block with alcohol. We block with all sorts of stuff. You know, we might go and get a big box of Krispy Kreme donuts and eat nearly all of them just because we feel sad. Yeah.
And then you feel worse after, and then you use that emotion to beat yourself up with.
Yeah, and then you probably won't be able to sleep because you've got more sugar in your system than you need to have. And then your lack of sleep then affects your mood. So then you wake up feeling groggy, and then you're off to a bad start already. So it's not just mindfulness. It's your whole digital diet. It's your diet.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you could do this with social media big time. I mean, if you're on that screen all the time, it does stuff to your brain, folks. It's
obviously.
Don't stop.
Don't look at anyone else's for hours.
And you know what, actually, Lucy, listening to you, it was kind of going, you know, this is quite refreshing listening to a mental health nurse and, you know, well-being practitioner, mindfulness meditation instructor, has been for many years, and she's still saying that she's figuring things out about her mindfulness practice, really. Yeah. So this isn't kind of like, oh, you know, you've got to be perfect either.
No, this is a practice, and I've always come at it from, I struggle too. You know, I'm not kind of immune to feeling sad or having difficulty. It's just that along the way, I've built up some resilience, and I've got some tools in my toolbox, which I share with others. But I'm very open in saying that I fall off, you know. I'll have a meditation practice every day, and then there might be periods where I don't do any practice, and then I have to get back on again and start my practice again.
But it's not like mental health and grief and fear, it's ever evolving, isn't it? It's not just like, well, I've reached this destination, I'm done with it all now. It changes daily as you change.
It does. And it's a real practice of self-care, you know. And over the years, I haven't just, you know, I eat a good diet now. I haven't always eaten a good diet. That's been a process. And I'm now actually getting to the point where I'm just naturally wanting to cut meat out because that's just not what I want to do anymore. But it's not all just happened overnight. But when you start to look at how nutrition or how hydration plays an impact on your mental health, you start to maybe... Even drinking enough water for a lot of people with anxiety, you know, we should drink around over 2 litres of water a day, a fluid a day. And if you're not doing that and you've got anxiety and you're struggling with palpitations or you're feeling anxious throughout the day, have a look at what you're drinking.
Oh my gosh. She says that she drinks 3 cans of Tango and some coffee today. I wonder why I'm flapping about technology.
Catherine's having like a major, like almost like a midlife crisis here with this episode. She's going, oh my God, I got to start drinking more water. I got to cut out the alcohol, stop eating meat.
Oh my God. Catherine,
I'm lying in my bed in the dark, contemplating everything.
In a cold, dark room. Just put a cold flannel on your forehead and have a lie down.
I know. I'd love to just to have a bit of an assessment with you, Catherine, and be like, okay, so tell me about what you're eating and what you're drinking and how much are you sleeping and et cetera.
I think you just want to run in the other direction. Seriously. You're like, I can't even deal with this right now.
Point taken.
Lucy, so I mean, that's the whole thing, isn't it? You created this app off the back of losing Ellie.
Yeah.
But you're already doing these practices. So What made you go into doing that?
So before losing Ellie, I'd always been into kind of relaxation and meditation from having the anxiety initially and deepening that. And then when I fell pregnant with Ellie, my friend told me about hypnobirthing, which is relaxation for birth. She was like, you're into all that relaxation stuff. I think this would be really up your street. So I looked to do a course when I got pregnant with Ellie, and we did a course quite early on in that you're not supposed to really do a course till around 20 weeks just to make sure everything's okay. But I think I was really persistent with the teacher in that I was very persuasive in that I wanted to start ASAP. So we did a hypnobirthing course, and then when we went for the 20 week scan, I've got a heart condition. So they told me to go for further tests on Ellie's heart just to be on the safe side. And me and Rick practically went skipping in the hospital demanding a home birth because we was all hypnobirthed and empowered and we wanted it to be all natural and everything. And then we got to the appointment and I mean, I'm sure you've heard similar stories with what should have been a 20 minute appointment ended up as an 8 hour appointment. And
the room of doom.
Yeah. And we got to the end of the day and the consultant said, we're not quite sure what's up with Ellie's heart, but what we can see at the minute is it's not formed properly. We don't know whether it's operable. We're not sure. And we had the consultant say to us, you might be looking at termination for medical reasons, or you could go to full term, but we just need to do a few more tests. That continued over a period of 3 weeks of going back and forth and back and forth. And eventually they just sort of said, it's really not looking good. And in all honesty, it would take a miracle to save her. She looks like she's not compatible with life. And so we actually, myself and Rick, actually during that time, it sounds crazy looking back now, but we took ourselves off to go camping in a yurt with a dog because we needed some space away from our family who had a lot of opinions about what we should do. We also needed space from the house that we was in because it just felt like we didn't want to be with this difficulty in this space. This is our home.
It doesn't sound odd. It sounds really healthy, actually. Like your own back.
It doesn't sound crazy at all. I mean, you're speaking to people who've been through TFMR, so we're kind of like, that makes sense. Total sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm like quite inspiring, actually.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. And we took ourselves off. We didn't take our phones with us, and we spent a lot of time on the beach and with the dog, and we spent time with Ellie as well because she was obviously she was moving and kicking at that point, and it was just. Wow. Nice to spend some time with her. But then while we was away, we did make the decision that, you know, we would
probably be looking to terminate for medical reasons. But we decided that if we were going to do that, we still wanted to have a hypnobirth with Ellie. We wanted to use the techniques and the skills that we'd learned to try and make it into something that was really positive and memorable. And we wanted to bring her into the world in a relaxed way. So we did agree to have the termination for medical reasons. And then we went to the hospital and we just implemented as much as we could in the short amount of time that we had.
Yeah.
She was born to like relaxing music, lavender spray. I used breathing techniques. Rick, my birth partner, he was an amazing birth partner. He gave me gentle massage on my back, on my head. And I mean, of course it was painful. It was painful emotionally. It was painful physically. But actually, I think without all of those and the way that we approached it, I don't think I could be here on this podcast and speak so positively about Ellie's birth. And
she was your first as well, wasn't she?
She was, yeah. So
do you think all that like lessened the trauma of
it? Yeah. The only thing I find traumatic, if I'm absolutely honest, was the point that she had the injection. Because what happened is the consultant, the whole thing took an hour to get the injection into her heart because she kept missing her. So she kept having to go in and in and in and in.
Then
we had a little break and then we went back again. And then they said, you might have to go home and come back tomorrow and we'll try again. Me and Rick said, no way. I'm not going. I'm here now. My bags are packed. I'm here. I'm doing this. I'm ready.
Yeah. No, once you've gone down that road, it's like, we're not leaving here.
I don't think professionals even know the impact of that on someone who's like just preparing to go through with giving birth to a baby that's not going to live.
Exactly, yeah. So she thought she'd missed Ellie's heart. And then we went into a side room to kind of just wait a little bit because I said, I need to stop now. I need you to stop doing this. And during that time that we was in that room together, we put our... Oh, I call it, it's like yoga music. It's very relaxing. So I had my yoga music on and I was eating Twirl chocolate bars. And I was really, really having a, like, just a calm, relaxed time and trying to calm down from what we was kind of experiencing. It was kind of my way of, I don't know, detaching, I guess, from the situation. Let's put some music on. Let's eat some chocolate. But then when we got back in the room, apparently during that time that we were together eating chocolate and listening to music, she'd passed away during that time. Which we took a lot of comfort in that because in a way she passed away during a time that me and Rick were happy together in that moment. And it wasn't in a room with strangers with an injection in my belly. So then delivery started and we just used all the techniques we'd learned. And that's the only part I find traumatic, that part, the injection. I find that very difficult to reflect back on. And that's something that I'm still working with gently to go back to that memory. Just gently and breathing with that strong emotion that comes up. And then after her death, I decided that I wanted to train to teach hypnobirthing in her memory. I was working for a suicide prevention team at the time, and I really felt like I couldn't go back to the NHS job because my head wasn't in the right place to assess whether I thought somebody was well enough to either kill themselves or not. And I was just like, can't go back at the moment. So I decided to see that I was going to set my own wellbeing business up as a bit of a way back towards my own recovery so I could help others and help myself. And I could work hours that would be suitable for my own needs in a kind and gentle way. And I went to train to teach hypnobirthing. So I was actually in London. It's crazy looking back because I lost Ellie in the May. And in September, I went off to London to go and train to teach hypnobirthing. And I sat in a room of about 30 mothers who all went round and told all the story of how amazing their birth was. And it got to me and I'm like going round, I'm thinking, shit. I'm like,
Lucy. Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, did you realize? No, you didn't know that that's what they were going to do.
No. And I sat there and I was like, deep breath. And I told my story and it was,
wow.
You could have heard a pin drop. I had nothing but sympathy from a whole room of people. I bet they thought, what the bloody hell are you doing here?
It's incredibly brave to sit there and say that in front of this room of strangers.
I mean, it was 6 months after I lost Ellie. And
yeah.
I think looking back, I was just so determined to try and make sense of what had happened. and just to do something with it. And I just thought, if I can just train to teach, because I was really, I came away from Ellie's birth feeling really empowered to give birth again, if we felt strong enough to do that again, because at that point we weren't sure whether we wanted to try again because we were scared. But I really felt passionate to try and teach other parents what we had done in Ellie's memory. So I did it, and I did my training.
Did you find it healing when you were telling your story? Because I was just thinking back to some people when they tell us their stories and they just type it out and we're like, oh, I just needed to get it out.
Yeah, I think it was healing in a way to give it that space and to, you know, say it out loud. But yeah, looking back, I don't really know how I did what I did, to be honest, because it seems absolutely crazy now when I think about it. Like, what on earth were you doing going doing that so soon after losing Ellie? But I took Rick with me, and I actually fell pregnant with my rainbow baby on that weekend of my training. So I was obviously in a really good headspace because it was a lot of relaxation. So Isaac was conceived of the weekend that I did my hypnobirthing training, and he was a really real hypno baby from conception to birth. And I think having Isaac was healing in itself, because I felt like there was a real symbolism about me doing the hypnobirthing training, and then what are the chances of me falling pregnant on that weekend of that training? Because then I was working with families, but I was able to tell my story with Ellie, but I also had the comfort of knowing that I had my rainbow baby inside of me.
And quite a spiritual thing as well. Yeah. Like all these things lining up that you feel, you take comfort from and feel as well.
You really feel like Ellie was there with you in all of this.
Yeah. And it was really awkward working with hypnobirthing parents, you know, when they'd come and they were dead excited, and I would openly share at the beginning my story of what had happened. Because one of the queries that the teachers had was I going to instill fear in these parents? If I came with my birth story that wasn't positive?
Isn't that interesting? Not positive.
Yeah.
Because I know Ellie died, but I'm still getting from you that it was a positive experience.
Yeah, which is what my strength was when I did share my story with people. I said, look, you know, if I could do if me and Rick could achieve what we achieved in that situation, then this hypnobirthing, there's something in it, which is why I'm here to share it with you. And I'm really passionate to do that. And I often feel like it inspired and moved people enough to want to really engage and listen more and find out more about it.
Yeah. It goes back to those uncomfortable feelings, though, doesn't it? Like, people don't want to sit with those uncomfortable feelings of hearing something that's not nice.
Well, also, I think, look, I get that it might be difficult for expectant parents to hear these stories, but also this is part of the problem with TFMR and other forms of baby loss, is it's not talked about openly. So then when it happens to you, you're in massive shock of that this even happens, you know? So it's like, it's this catch 22. So we have to be able to open up the discussion and trust that people are, I was going to say robust, that's not really the right word. It's not exactly what I mean, but
it's life though, isn't it? Like, it happens.
Like, this happens.
Why do people shy away from talking about it? And it just takes one person, I think, to speak up, and then you get a movement of, if it's happened to someone else, they're like, oh, me too. And
it's such a powerful thing. And I mean, I never used to go into loads of detail. I'd just say, you know, we lost Ellie. It was termination for medical reasons. And I always said it was nothing that I did. It was just unpredictable. You know, something happened. I don't know what happened, but it wasn't anything I did. That was that. I mean, it was never a problem. And, you know, and I taught for a couple of years, but I kept thinking back to my experience of Ellie. And I kept thinking, there's so many families out there going through this experience of delivering a baby that's passed away, whether that be for termination for medical reasons or other reasons, that are having to deliver without any experience, or, you know, if you've had a baby before, great, but still, you know, this is still a different thing.
Absolutely.
Delivering a baby that's not alive, it's different than delivering a baby that you know is alive. So I kept thinking back to that and thinking, I want to create something. And I kept thinking of the name Ellie's Gift. And I truly, honestly, wholeheartedly believe that through me, Ellie is just doing such good work. And, you know, for me, I thought, I want to create something, and it is Ellie's Gift to the World. And I set my head to it. I did some work, and the Ellie's Gift app was born. So
we hear that a lot, don't we? Like, a lot of the guests we've had on have created something,
yeah, you
know, from losing their babies that is now a legacy and helping others through it as well.
Yeah, it's really healing, and it helps me to make sense of her little spark, really, you know. You know, I don't know what it is about butterflies, but I've always said Ellie's had a butterfly effect, because after she passed away, lots of good things happened, which again is like, well, how can good things happen? You've lost a child, surely. Like, do you not care? And it's like, no, going back to this mindfulness again, you know, it's okay to feel sadness and everything else, all that crappy stuff. It's okay to feel that, but to also experience joy and happiness as well. It's okay to hold, to have these things.
It's the word and, isn't it?
And.
Yes, I feel sad and I feel joy.
Yes.
I feel powerful grief message. And I feel gratitude.
Yes.
It's the word and. They all exist together.
Yeah. But you know, life offers so much joy to us in every single moment. This moment that we're in right now is the present moment. There's nothing else that's more real than right now. You know, as we sit here and speak together, this is it. There's nothing's happened in the future. Everything's happened in the past. Right now in this moment, but there's so much joy. You know, like right now, think about what's pleasant for you at the moment. For me, what's pleasant for me, I'm sat in a comfortable chair. I'm in a wonderful warm room. You know,
you've got great company. You know, what more could you want?
Exactly. So, you know, joy is available to us in every given. Yeah. And we don't have to feel guilty for that. You know, we don't have to feel guilty to smile. It's okay, because, you know, we're here living this human experience. You know, we've got all the conditions here to be happy right now in this moment. They're all here. Yeah. We just have to be aware of them and open our hearts. And,
It's so easy to forget the little things that go right. Mm. So sometimes so fleeting, the small things. And then we instantly forget when all the big, bad, stressful life events happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And then bringing yourself back to, oh, well, that actually did go okay. Yeah. Today, you know?
Yeah. So this is what I mean about the butterfly effect. There's a lot of good stuff that's happened, you know, and just thinking back to this event that happened today, part of what we had to do today on this retreat was to go out for a mindful walk on our own. So that meant, you know, walking really slowly, taking in the elements, just really kind of taking nature in. And I see butterflies everywhere. It reminds me of Ellie. And my husband is such a terror. He said to me, I see white butterflies. And he said, I always see white butterflies everywhere. They're everywhere. They're not that rare. And I said, Rick, you've completely ruined that for me now. Like that is like, that's my one thing that I see. And you've just basically shit on it. Just like, anyways, like, no, I didn't mean that. And so he was joking. And he said, I'll tell you what, if you see a single yellow butterfly, that's our girl. And I am not joking. You'll know what I'm going to say today. I went for this walk. And first of all, a little robin appeared. Well, I take a lot from robins as well.
Yeah.
So a little robin appeared.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then the next thing that appeared was this yellow butterfly, one single yellow butterfly. And I haven't seen a yellow butterfly all year. I've seen white ones every single day.
Yellow for you because your husband's like, well, I see white ones everywhere.
You know what? I was like walking in nature and I went, yeah, screw you, Rick.
It's girl power. Ellie and you are like.
Yeah. And he came home this evening and I said, you never guess what I saw today. So, you know, nature is so healing. I don't know if you can relate, but after I lost Ellie, I took to the garden straight away. I had to get my hands in the earth.
Yeah,
I had to feel connected some way.
No, I mean, I say it. I don't say it on this podcast, but my thing is nature is my church. That is my spiritual place. I built a deck lately, folks. It definitely. I love getting close to nature, trees and water, whatever. Mm-hmm. It just is really grounding.
Yeah.
I wanted us to sort of talk about the app a little bit because we sort of steered away from that. Let's understand what it is and what people will get from it, where they'll get it. Is it on the NHS? I think you've developed it, haven't you, with some NHS help, haven't you?
Yeah. So the app is a quick resource tool for families to use when they find out that the baby's died and they've got to prepare for delivery. So what it does is it pulls together some really quick videos all around for example, how to breathe during your contractions. You know, that's something that people don't know. It talks about how you can promote relaxation during birth using smells, music, changing the environment, bringing in home comforts. It talks about how birth partner can help support during labor in terms of reducing anxiety or just being there as a support. It offers a baby loss birth plan. So okay. A birth plan's not like a plan of what you want to go right on the day. It's more around what's important to you on the day. So my birth plan said things like Lucy would like people to speak in hushed voices. Lucy doesn't want any students present. You know, Lucy doesn't want to be offered any pain relief unless she requests it. Those kind of things.
Yeah.
Because we can't control what happens, but we can certainly control those conditions about what's important to us. I've got in there a hospital, what to pack in your hospital bag checklist, because if you've never done that before, then, you know, you don't know what you need. And there's also relaxation MP3 tracks. There is guided meditations. There's just music you can listen to. So it's just a video series, really. It's kind of split into three sections, I think it is, mind, body, birth. I think there's resources as well. So it's technically four, but three sections in the main part. And really in its form at the moment, it's just in its bare bones, because as I'm connecting more with the baby loss community and listening and seeing and just really understanding things from other people's perspective, there's so much more that I'm planning to add to it and so many more resources to add to it. So the app was developed by myself originally, and then I've managed to link in with St. Mary's Hospital in Manchester and Dr. Alex Hazel from Tommy's as well. Mm-hmm. So together, collaboratively, what we're trying to do is we're trying to get it to all the spaces that we want it to get to. But first of all, we need to make sure it meets certain requirements, etc. So we're just in that process at the moment. But they're very open to this holistic approach, because I don't know whether people have necessarily thought about this before. I'm not sure whether
I doubt it. I highly doubt people have thought about it before.
It's always so like emotional, isn't it? And there's so many other things your mind is thinking of that.
Well, I can't imagine a doctor is going to go, I know, I've got time to develop an app to help women with baby loss and stillbirth and TFMR. You know, it's just...
Especially not in the last 2 years anyway.
No. So at the minute, I'm just kind of waiting for the whole NHS thing. It's kind of a bit of a slow burner, if I'm honest with you.
Tanker ship, imagine. <Yes. laughs> Like a cargo ship.
And one that got stuck in a canal.
Yeah, exactly. So at the minute, I'm just doing my little best to raise as much awareness as I can of it. Just
so people can still get it. It's just that you're going the NHS route. It takes longer for it to be downloaded.
It does. Yeah. So they can get it on the Play Store. It's just Ellie's Gift. Mm-hmm. It's coming to Apple. And then there's also a web app version as well for people who can't access it via apps. And I will definitely say that at no point ever will this app ever make money, because that was not what it was about. Yeah. It's set up for free. It's a free resource and it will continue to stay that way. You know, it's really interesting though. I've recently been reaching out to hypnobirthing instructors to teach them around baby loss and to support supporting rainbow parents as well. So I've just done some training with a lot of people, and there's so many more that want more. And universities are now wanting me to go in to train their student midwives and things. Wow. But I've approached lots of people about this app. Sometimes people don't get back to me. One hypnobirthing company in particular, I don't want to name any names. They're a really big company though. A big company. Anyway, they said that because it doesn't fit in with their marketing and their branding, that they can't promote it. Because, you know, they promote positive births. And it doesn't fit in with what they offer.
Yeah, you fuckers. I don't know, you big hypnobirthing company, you stop telling us that we can't have positive births. Like, I've just basically, this is like me really angry, but trying not to totally lose it, because it's that just really fucks me off. It really does. Oh my God.
I know, it's shocking. It shocked me. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I was like, seriously, so people that are signing up for your course are exempt from baby loss, because that's pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's not going to happen to them. I know. Get into the real world.
It's a wonder I was fighting so hard, like, to have this included in normal everyday life. Just
absolutely. Oh, yeah. So I'm trying my little best to raise awareness where I can.
Oh, bless you, Lucy. I mean, it's amazing what you've done so far. Mm. To be honest, it really is amazing how much work you've done and how far it's gotten. And it's just been you. It's a real testament. Yeah, so there's one last thing that we do. We're going to sort of wrap it up there. And one last thing that we do is these TFMR takeaways. And so we always ask all of our guests this. And the question is this, Lucy, what advice or piece of hope would you give to women or families who are either facing a TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Facing a TFMR is, I think, obviously, education's a big one for me. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the first thing would be to go and look for the Ellie's Gift app. That would be a number one.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. But just to kind of try and stay in the present moment as much as you can, because being in the moment with that difficulty of a TFMR is going to be difficult, but it's going to be worse if you start imagining the aftermath of that storm. Meaning, if you start imagining coming home from hospital or coming home without your baby, what are people going to say to you? Are family and friends going to ask where your child is, et cetera, because that is just going to amplify the suffering that you're already experiencing. So it's really about trying to stay present with your experience of what's happening and understanding that just by doing some, and I know deep breathing just sounds like, what's deep breathing going to do? But actually, when we learn to do some deep breathing, really slowing the breath down through the nose, in through the nose and out through the nose, breathing deep into the belly, that's going to send signals to your brain to stimulate that parasympathetic state, which is your relaxed state. That's going to really help. So when you've got those difficulties, just to really try and give it space and be there with it, not think about what's to come next. You know, there's a really great saying that, you know, you can get through this moment, just this moment. If you can think that, I can get through this moment, not the next hour, because the next hour might seem impossible, but this moment right now, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
So
one step at a time.
One step at a time. Yeah.
One baby, teeny weeny step at a time.
Extremely baby, teeny weeny step at a time. Yeah. And, you know, people following TFMR, again, the same applies, just to be with each moment. But really just to kind of, you know, care for yourself as you would somebody hurting, a friend, you know, give yourself time with that wound and don't rush it. Just don't rush it, because, you know, no one expects you to pick yourself up off your feet and get on with it. And, you know, there's a lot of support via the baby loss community on Instagram. I can't believe how much support there is. It's amazing. There's so many resources on there. But yeah, just learning how to be with the rawness of it. And that's difficult. It is. But when we can do that and use our breath and we can care for it and hold space for it, it allows it just to be there with kindness and dignity.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lucy. It's been really inspiring to listen to you and just have, I feel like I get an inner strength from you that I can just draw on as well.
Good.
Yeah, Catherine's going to be one of your clients. I can feel it. Thank you so much, Lucy.
You're more than welcome.
It's been really great. So thank you so much for listening again today. We hope you enjoyed it. Let us know by messaging us over on social media. Facebook and Instagram is Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter is Talk TFMR.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast from Podbean or Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to make sure you get all of our new episodes as soon as they are released.
That's all for this time. Thank you. And please take gentle care of yourselves.
Thank you. Bye-bye.